Good afternoon. I'm Bojana Mirosavljević and I'm Patient Engagement Officer in Ergomed. Thank you for joining us on the first podcast in the series dedicated to patient centricity. We will be discussing with different stakeholders involved in clinical research what patient centricity means from their perspective. This first podcast should introduce you to Ergomed's patient centricity approach and to Patient Organization Representative Board at Ergomed and its members. Next podcast will continue discussion with different patient organizations for rare diseases, of course, to get to know what do patient organizations consider to be a patient-centric pharmaceutical company or CRO company. What exactly pharmaceutical company or CRO company should do or should have to be patient-centric from the patient perspective. And finally, representatives of pharmaceutical companies will speak with us on the same topic and explain to us exactly how their companies implement the patient-centricity approach. But first, I would like to introduce myself because my personal life story knows the term patient-centricity very well. By education, I am a chemist and embryologist. Since 2010, I am the founder and president of the Patient Organization for Children with Rare Diseases in Serbia, which provides support to children who suffer from rare diseases and their families, of course. My path to patient centricity and clinical trials has very personal roots. My daughter Zoya had a very rare neurodegenerative disease called Batten disease. For years, we tried to find a way to save our girl's life. And during those years, we communicated with a lot of pharmaceutical companies, CRO companies, regulatory bodies, drug medicine agency, other patient organizations looking for a cure. It quickly became very clear to us that the only way to save her was to look for some clinical trial. At that time, I didn't even know what rare diseases were, let alone clinical trials for rare diseases or compassionate use programs. There is no cure for Batten disease at that moment, neither for 95% of the rare diseases. Zoya passed away in her 9 years of life in 2013, but her heritage is Zoya's law in Serbia that makes it possible to diagnose genetic and rare diseases in the very short term. That was not the case before this law. Zoya's law was adopted unanimously in 2015, and in just 7 years, it has saved more than 3,000 lives. It was very clear that I will dedicate my life to clinical research and helping patients suffering from rare diseases. In order to be able to communicate it with all these people at all, I had to educate myself a lot about the drug development process and clinical research in general. My education lasted 4 years, and I would like to highlight maybe just two organizations that I think helped me the most. First, Eurovdis Summer School on Clinical Research and European Patient Academy EUPATI. Thanks to EUPATI, European Patient Academy, I became a patient expert for rare diseases with knowledge and tools to increase patient involvement in medicines, research and development, regulatory deliberation, and other patient engagement initiatives. Just around that time, my daughter passed away, the breakthrough of patient representatives into the world of the pharmaceutical industry began to be highly respected and the voice of the patient was recognized finally. Companies are increasingly moving in the direction of patient-focused approach, which is very good. And several companies approached me to be their patient engagement expert. But I decided to join Ergomed as I immediately recognized that this company really has a strong commitment to the patients. This company is thinking about the patients and how to actually help them in their journey to get better treatment and make participation in clinical trials easier and less troublesome. Ergomed recognized the fact that the patients have a unique expertise regarding their disease and treatment. Only patients know what they really experience day by day. By leveraging the insights obtained from patients and their families, their needs and priorities, we aim to achieve more successful clinical trial with the ultimate goal of bringing safe and effective therapies to patients in areas with high unmet medical needs. The term patient centricity is very present in the world of pharmaceutical companies and clinical research. All companies insist on the patient-centricity or patient-focused approach, and it is very, very interesting to see how they really implement it. Many companies have whole teams or experts dedicated to patient engagement and patient-centricity area. When we speak about rare diseases research in particular, the importance of patient-centricity is even greater. Ergomed is fully committed to true patient centricity in orphan drug development. Guided with this principle, we formed the Patient Organization Representative Board based on the growing recognition, both within the biopharmaceutical industry and regulatory agency, that the patients need a greater voice in the development of new medicines. Rare disease patients are often expert in their own condition, and the patient groups can be really, really driving force in pharmaceutical research and development. Members of our board amplify our patient-centric approach in clinical research. They represent patient groups and related support organizations in various therapeutic areas and complement each other's expertise and experience. The board supports our commitment to educate patients and patient groups. Together with the board members, Ergomed organizes free webinars for the patients and patient communities, educating them on clinical development, for example, drug development process in general, phases of the clinical trial, informed consent, compassionate use program, etc. So I would like to introduce you board members. First, Eileen Have Davis from Aparito. Eileen founded Aparito in 2015, a digital health company focused on developing patient-centric digital outcomes to support decentralized clinical trials. Eileen also serves as the chair of Board of Trustees for Metabolic Support UK, a patient advocacy group supporting more than 400 rare inherited metabolic diseases. Second member is Ines Alves, who is a patient expert in rare bone disease. She is the creator of Beyond Achondroplasia, as well as the founder and president of the Skeletal Dysplasia National Association. Being EUPATI Fellow and EUPATI Fundamentals Trainer, Ines serves as a vice president of EUPATI Portugal and patient representative of European Reference Network for Rare Bone Disorders. As a mother of three children, one of which has achondroplasia, a rare bone condition, she is involved in a number of EU initiatives aimed, of course, to improve research, diagnostic, and treatment for rare bone disorders. Dr. Rick Thompson from Find the Cure. Find the Cure is a UK charity that is building the rare disease community in order to drive research and help develop treatments. Find the Cure aims to transform the world's understandings of rare diseases and devastating impact they have on people's lives. Now, I would like to present our fourth member, Alan Thomas, who is a patient engagement advocate for rare diseases in general and ataxia in particular. Patient himself with a life-limiting rare disease, he can convey the patient engagement message from his point of view in all issues regarding the well-being of patients. Alan is the founder of patient-focused charity Ataxia and Me, which supports patients and all affected by these life-limiting conditions. This organization has a focus on ataxia, but also including associated rare diseases and movement disorders. Ataxia means lack of order, and people with ataxia have problems with movement, balance, speech. So their motto is to, as they say, return some order to the lack of order.
So, Ines, you are the youngest member of this board. When I say youngest, I mean the newest. You joined our board very recently, about 7-8 months ago. Can you tell us, please, why did you accept to be a member of the board?
Thank you, Bojana, for the question. And I have to say that accepting this invitation was very connected about being yourself. you inviting me, as I know you quite well, and I know fantastic and unique patient advocate you are. And when I knew that you were collaborating with Ergomed, curiosity set in, and I saw that you have done a good choice regarding a company that has an insight on what patients really need. And there are so many companies out there, so many CROs and pharma companies. And although many advocate for patient centricity and patient focus, that is not always in practice. And I'm confident that good examples are needed to progress on the status quo of this patient centricity. And you being a unique advocate made me think and consider that it would be a relevant and useful input to be part of the PRO board of Ergomed.
Thank you so much, Ines. Thank you for being part of our board. Ellen, can you tell us why did you accept to be a member of this board?
Yeah, so thank you. I mean, from my personal background, I've now been supporting clinical trials in the rare disease space and the pediatric space for 20 odd years. And throughout that time, have tried to influence a more patient-centric design to the way that the protocols are conceived from offset. And that for me was about making sure this happened really before it kind of got to the ethics or site approval level. And being part of this advisory board was, you know, really taking my ambition to influence study design very, very early on. And Ergomed is very well placed to do that.
Thank you, Aline. Rick, can you tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of a fusion of the two examples we've had already, really. I think I'm really keen to get involved with any of these kind of activities where you can drive home the importance of patient engagement into the earliest stage of clinical research and really make sure that makes a difference to rare disease patients. And the key is always that you want to work with those groups where you know they believe it themselves, have the right ethos themselves, and want to listen. It's not just about tokenism. It's about companies that want to listen and try and implement the change. And if you can do that, you want to engage. So really what Ines says is a big part of it. To see Ergomed's desire to appoint yourself, Boyana, into that position and your own track record really speaks to a desire to bring that into the heart of the company, which is fantastic, as we want to see. To see the kind of past track record of Ergomed and the staff there through previous companies and the way they've worked, you can see people who really are keen to find ways to work with patients and move the issues forward, particularly for those in my case in the rare disease space. And that's something I'm really positive about. And all of that comes together to mean the right people in place to make the difference and the position of the company to be one that's really helping to focus on driving clinical trials forward and to be a really unique influencer and an unbiased broker between that patient community and the larger pharmaceutical world. I think it's a really unique place that I'm keen to try and to help and support and put some influence into. So yeah, congratulations to you for your great work that helped suck us all in, I suppose.
Thank you so much. Now I will read Alan's answer. He was kindly enough to send us his answer on this question. So Alan said, I got involved with Ergomed after meeting them at many conferences and could see the keenness to involve the patient. And as I say, they were very willing to talk with me, not about me, so with me. So thank you, Alan, for answer. And now we can move to next question. Ines, you are someone who lives that life of rare disease patient every day through the life of your child. But at the same time, you are committed to the patient engagement role and approach through all the roles you have. Can you tell us, please, what is actually patient centricity to you? And maybe after then, you can just continue to answer, what does a company need to have or what does company need to do to be a patient centricity from your perspective?
Thank you, Brianna. Well, patient centricity, I think it's a concept not well understood globally, because it seems like you need to have a patient at the center and then work around it. And that's not what, in fact, the concept aims to. So it's really regarding having collaborative vision and work with researchers and companies and patients and patient representatives towards having meaningful outcomes. And this is not set in the last minute. This is not set in the latest phases. This needs to be early input from every one of these stakeholders' perspective and point of views. And patient centricity is really aiming to get the needed outcomes for patients and not having the patient at the center and looking around it. So what do companies need to do? In fact, they need to put this in practice very early. What we still see is having a lot of engagement when drug development is in the latest phases. And that puts a hard pressure over CROs and companies to deliver something that may not and many times is not meaningful or useful for patients and the patient's community. And having a company, and I mean a pharma company or CRO, that is dedicated to having this early and continuous involvement and collaboration from patient experts and communities will escalate on results and on patient retention and enrollment for clinical trials and have the outcomes that are expected. So it's not just considering the outcomes, but also all the process between the early research to having a drug or treatment available at the end. And this global action needs collaborative work from one point to the other. I don't like to say from bench to bedside, because that's a really old-fashioned concept on having a researcher on a bench in the lab and a patient on the bedside. We need to have a more 21st century view on having expert patients involved, really engaged communities, also eager to collaborate, and accelerating clinical research to a level that is useful, rational, and meaningful for everyone.
Thank you so much, Ines. Yes, you're right that now these days all companies, most of the companies present themselves as a patient-centric, but in reality it is not always the case. Aline, am I right when I say that your passion to help patients actually begin in early of your career as a pediatric nurse? Is that where your determination to help people with rare disease to get access to treatments begins? Because you have over 20 years of clinical research and regulatory experience. You have dedicated your whole life to help patients suffer from rare diseases. And I think your view of the patient-centricity approach is very, very important. Can you please tell us what is patient-centricity to you and what does a company need to have or to do to be patient-centricity from your perspective?
Yes, thank you. I mean, it's a tough act to follow. But, you know, from the one thing I would say that I'm giving hope and optimism now is that 20 years ago, we were just using words such as patient input, and then it became patient involvement, and then it became patient engagement. And now we're sort of at a point of patient centricity. And I feel that we're finally moving away from this tokenism of saying, well, I asked a couple of patients to read the patient information sheet for me and to write it in lay language. You know, the fact that the protocol was completely unfeasible and not patient-centric at all was sort of counterbalanced by the fact that they'd at least asked some patients to write it in a lay language. And I think that's where, for me, patient centricity means looking more centrally at the patient's needs, from their choice of outcomes, their accessibilities to trial sites, the formulation, and the longer term access. And we will never get that if we leave the patient engagement piece too late on in the discussion, and that they should be sort of the pivot to influence regulators, reimbursements, agencies, but also critically for, you know, the sponsors and the CRO to integrate their inputs into feasibility of clinical trials.
Yes, thank you, Ellen. I totally agree. Patient is key stakeholder, or should be, but we all need to push that patient is that bridge between all other stakeholders. So we all need to know what patient need. That is the point. Thank you, Ellen, so much for this. Rick, you are someone who is in daily contact with the patient organization and with patients themselves. You just know how they think, what their thoughts and reflections are. So can you tell us what is patient-centricity approach for you, and what does company need to have or to do to be patient-centric from your perspective?
Yeah, sure. And as Ellen said, I think two tough acts to follow there in what you guys have put out already. As you were talking, I was trying to think how I might try to summarize it. And maybe it's a perspective in how you look and think about the system. I think traditionally there's been an approach which maybe has been for companies to want to be selling and seeing their end user as the clinician, as the doctor. Because of that, there's been a way of looking at conditions as literally that, a list of clinical symptoms or biological pathways that have gone wrong. And the aim is to fix that biological pathway. And that's the problem. That's the isolated thing you're trying to tackle. And I think the idea around a patient-centric approach or ideally co-creation with patient groups is not to look at a condition as simply a list of medical terms or biological issues, but a person who's got a life, population of people who have a life, and how that challenge they're living with impacts it from birth to death, through the whole process, from day to day, from, you know, going to the toilet, going to school, or going to the hospital, and trying to incorporate that very big, wide, holistic view into your development for things to make a difference to that life, rather than to change the biological pathway, to change the life of the individual. And you can't get that perspective from a doctor. You can't get that perspective as a very highly qualified, intelligent and necessary biochemist or scientist or pharmaceutical executive. You can get that perspective by living that life and by talking and listening to the people who live that life. And I think that's the core and crux of it. And I think, as Ellen has said, we've seen a real shift over the past few years to begin to get patient engagement, advocacy, patient centricity more at the heart of work, but there's still a decent way to go in a lot of cases. And what that comes down to is try and find ways to bring those opinions to the heart of the process super early on, to try and help companies find ways to develop products that really impact the lives of the patients in a meaningful way. I suppose then the additional thing to add to that is what companies should do. I think Ellen's right that traditionally it might just been a sense of we should talk to patients at certain points, and those have been very limited. And increasingly we're seeing more and more time points in the process where people are talking to patients, and that's great. But it's actually about thinking about and putting yourself in the shoes of that patient and thinking what they'd like to hear and when they'd like to hear it. So it's not just asking, hey, what should we do about endpoints? It's then going back to them and saying, this is how we actually worked on endpoints and have tried to do things, and explaining what we could do and couldn't do, and looking to co-create and change that together with them. And this approach, I believe, and I'm sure there's increasing evidence out there, does lead to better products and does lead to a better business model, and ultimately better bottom lines for the companies that do it, because you're going to develop a treatment that really works for your fundamentally customers, for the beneficiaries, for the patients who are looking for the drug. And the more we can show that, the more we should see this actual approach becoming entrenched, and I'm hopeful we'll get there. So yeah, that's probably the best perspective I can give that adds to what's already been said by two excellent speakers.
Okay, thank you, Rick. But we have Alan's answer also. So we did ask him what is patient centricity for him. His answer is, this is a loaded question, as the term patient centricity can mean variant things to many people, and not, as I have witnessed, a pharma organization just meeting for a coffee with the patient. Yeah. So the next question was, what does the company need to have or to do to be patient centric? from his perspective, the pharma community need to involve the patient in early stage of drug development. The patient is the end user, so why not use this vast and extremely important knowledge base? The company need to overcome any barriers to enable them to be patient-centric. Any documentation needs to have a jargon and abbreviations in a fully understandable manner and address any financial barriers that may prevent the patient participation, any accommodation required, any companion that may be needed. So thank you again, Alan, for his answer.
Thanks again to everyone who joined us on our first podcast with the topic patient centricity. I think we have concluded very important things, important primary for patients, because we are all here because of the patients. Thank you to our interlocutors for being part of our board and for helping us to make our patient-centric approach transparent. So we can therefore conclude several things. First, it is very, very important to involve the patient organization and patient representatives at the earliest possible stage of the clinical research process. It is necessary to communicate it and talk to them, but not only to listen to them, but to really, really hear them and their suggestions and inputs to implement in the drug development planning, study planning, design planning, including some documents, patient information and consent, and any other documents across all phases of clinical research. It must be a real interaction and dialogue, not just check the box exercise. Rare disease patients are often experts in their own condition, and patient groups can be a driving force. We all know that. That bi-directional relationship between patients and researcher or research team and integration of the patient voice is very, very important. That will for sure improve the value of the research and better inform patient and caregiver healthcare decision making. We concluded also that the patient organization can help to plan, guide, and coordinate the patient involvement. Patient involvement can help researchers approach their work from a totally new perspective. If we include patients in design and management, that will guarantee that the issues such as ethics or safety are covered from the patient perspective. Overall, the engagement with the patient groups should be collaborative as a partners. It should be respectful to diversity, cultures, and always follow transparency, honesty, trust, where the information is shared openly across all participants. As I said at the beginning, this is just the first of series of the podcast we are planning. So on the occasion, I would like to announce the next podcast in which our interlocutors will be representatives of patient organization for rare diseases. And we will hear their thoughts on the topic, what do patient organizations consider to be a patient-centric pharmaceutical or CRO company, or why the pharmaceutical industry needs to be a part of the patient-centric movement, and what can we all do together to improve the patient-centric approach. So thank you again, and goodbye.